Welcome to the NTEB Prophecy News Podcast with your host and Bible teacher, Jeffrey Greider. Rightly divided, dispensationally correct, and standing on the authority of the King James Holy Bible, this program is brought to you by NowTheEndBegins.com.
And good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Monday edition of the Prophecy News Podcast. My name is Jeff Greider. I am the editor-in-chief of NowTheEndBegins.com, and today we're going to be talking about the United Nations Secretary General calling for a new social contract to promote Black Lives Matter and the LGBTQ agenda. This is what he said on Saturday. He said, COVID-19 is shining a spotlight on this injustice. The world is in turmoil. Economies are in freefall. We have been brought to our knees by a microscopic virus. The pandemic has demonstrated the fragility of our world. It has laid bare risks we have ignored for decades. Inadequate health systems, gaps in social protection, structural inequalities, environmental degradation, the climate crisis. Today, in demonstrations for racial equality, in campaigns against hate speech, in the struggles of people claiming their rights, and standing up for future generations, we see the beginnings of a new movement. And that's exactly right. We do see the beginnings of a new movement. And this is the New World Order. This is what they call the Great Reset, the Fourth Industrial Revolution. And we've been talking about all these things on various programs. And Saturday, this is what, and we're going to listen to some clips from the UN Secretary General. We're going to hear him say those things in his own words. And we're going to see if we can figure out what all of this has to do with COVID-19 and mandatory mask wearing and the coming vaccine and the digital ID from ID 2020. Let's go to the Lord in prayer and ask for his blessing on today's program. Heavenly Father, we thank you for your mercy. We thank you for your goodness. We thank you for all these that you're gathering, Lord, by way of internet to hear this program today. And Lord, we just, as we look at this news and some of it's annoying, some of it's frightening, and just everything in between, we look towards you, Father God, and we want you to have your will and your way in this program. And Lord, your word says that if you be lifted up, that you'll draw all men unto yourselves. And that's our goal here today, Lord, is to lift you up and to see if we can figure out where we are on the end times timeline as we wait for you to come get us like you promised in Titus 2:13. And Lord, we are looking for that blessed hope and the glorious appearing of you, the great God and our Savior, Jesus Christ. And we just thank you and commit this time to you, Lord, in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. Welcome, everybody. Happy Monday. And had a lot of really good feedback from the program last night. And I thought, mistakenly thought, that I could somehow cover all of the seals and trumpets and bowl judgments from the book of Revelation in a single two-hour program. But I was not even close to correct. So last night was part one, and then Wednesday, Lord willing, we'll do part two, where we'll look at the trumpet judgments of Revelation, and then on Sunday, we'll see if we can close it out with the bowl or vial judgments that we read about also in the book of Revelation. So it's going to be a three-part series, and like I said, I had a lot of really good positive feedback last night, and you guys had some great questions. So we're going to pick that up on Wednesday, and we're going to look at part two, the trumpet judgments from the book of Revelation. But today on the Prophecy News Podcast, we are looking at comments that have been made by the UN Secretary General, and this guy is pushing for a new world order at a lightning rate of speed. Listen, this clip that I'm going to play for you now is it's actually a video commercial produced by the United Nations, and you can't see the video that's attached to the audio that I'm going to play for you, but It is marches of Black Lives Matter. It is marches of the LGBTQ movement, and it's pictures of women wearing burqas and hijabs. And so that's the visual that you can't see that's attached to this clip that you're about to hear. And I call this the United Nations Pandemic New Era. Take a listen.
The pandemic has demonstrated the fragility of our world. It has laid bare risks we have ignored for decades, the myth that we are all in the same boat. Because while we are all floating on the same sea, it is clear that some are in super yachts, with others are clinging to drifting debris. We are at the breaking point, but we know which side of history we are on. Nelson Mandela said, and I quote, "One of the challenges of our time is to reinstill in the consciousness of our people that sense of human solidarity, of being in the world for one another and because and through others," end of quote. We belong to each other. We stand together or we fall apart. Today, in demonstrations for racial equality, in campaigns against hate speech, in the struggles of people claiming their rights and standing up for future generations, we see the beginnings of a new movement. This movement rejects inequality and division and unites young people, civil society, the private sector, cities, regions, and others behind policies for peace, our planet, justice, and human rights for all. It is already making a difference.
And there you have the official video commercial from the United Nations, and you heard the UN Secretary General on Saturday, July 18th. They celebrated International Nelson Mandela Day, and we all know who Nelson Mandela was. We know that he was a socialist and a Marxist, and those are the things that he stood for. And it's interesting that every single dictator that has risen up over the last 150 years, they all promise peace, they all promise safety, they all promise economic benefits, and yet whenever you see these movements come to pass, as we saw with the USSR, we saw with the fascist regimes in Germany and in Italy in World War II, and in Cuba in the 1960s and forward, and these dictators, all that they want to do is they seek to oppress the people to enrich themselves. And that has been a hallmark of every single dictatorship that we've seen. And now the United Nations, they want to bring this same plan in globally. That's what they want to do. And again, I wish you could have seen the video that they attached to it. And it's Black Lives Matter rioting in the streets. It's the LGBTQ waving their six-color rainbow battle flag. And on that it goes. And that is what the United Nations Secretary General is actually pointing towards. And that was just a clip from his speech. But in the longer speech, he goes on and he says a lot of things that are really, really quite fascinating. He says, COVID-19 has been linked to an X-ray revealing fractures in the fragile skeleton of the societies that we have built. COVID-19 is exposing fallacies and falsehoods everywhere. The lie that the free markets can deliver health care for all. The fiction that unpaid care work is not work. The delusion that we live in a post-racist world. The myth that we are all in the same boat. And that's what you hear in his longer speech. And if you had to translate what I just said, capitalism is bad, socialism is good, and the government needs to take care of everybody. And he specifically said, the fiction that unpaid care work is not work. That is absolutely right up there with what George Orwell talked about in his novel 1984, where he talks about doublethink, where you're having two opposing ideas in your head at the same time and you're embracing both of them. And for the Secretary General to say that being paid to stay home and not work is not work, I mean, that's the level of insanity that we're dealing with here. But it's not just the Secretary General of the United Nations. It is every Democratic governor and senator and congressman all across the United States. It's the leaders in all these different countries like the UK and France and Germany and Italy and everywhere that you look. People are buying into this. And so what do we see happening is we see an entire substructure that's being formed, and it's being created on the back of this COVID-19 pandemic, which, even though cases are going down and the death rate is dropping, the regulations are getting worse and worse and worse. I was saying last night that I was talking with a friend of mine in New Jersey, and their numbers are going down dramatically. And yet their governor, their Democratic Governor Murphy, he's issued the order that as the cases are dropping, he is now mandating that people just walking down the street, walking through the park, whatever you happen to be doing outside, if you're on the beach, you've got to put a mask on. And people are buying it. And people are absolutely doing it because they are afraid to not do it. And this is exactly what's going to happen when the vaccine is ready. And I hope that you can see by now that they're going to make you take it. Okay? Masks, if you remember, Fauci first said that masks were not necessary. You did not need to have a mask. And not only that, Fauci is on record as saying that masks don't really do much of anything at all. And here we are just a couple months later, and we did the story last night about the couple in Kentucky who was arrested and had ankle bracelets attached to their legs so they couldn't leave their house. And this is where we're headed towards. Do you remember that clip that we played a couple months ago? I think it was back in March or April. Alan Dershowitz, and he was talking about you have no right not to be vaccinated. Take a listen to this clip. Alan Dershowitz saying you have no right not to be vaccinated.
Let me put it very clearly. You have no constitutional right to endanger the public and spread a disease, even if you disagree. You have no right not to be vaccinated. You have no right not to wear a mask. You have no right to open up your business.
Wait, can I stop you? To be vaccinated, meaning if they decide you have to be vaccinated, we have to be vaccinated?
Absolutely. And if you refuse to be vaccinated, the state has the power to literally take you to a doctor's office and plunge a needle into your arm. If the vaccination,
where is that in the Constitution?
If the vaccination is designed to prevent the spreading disease. If the vaccination is only to prevent a disease that you will get, for example, if there's a disease that will kill you, you have the right to refuse that, but you have no right to refuse to be vaccinated against a contagious disease. Public health, the police power of the Constitution, gives the state the power to compel that, and there are cases in the United States Supreme Court.
Now, I know that makes you mad to hear that, but I really want those words to sink down deep into your brain. And when we played that clip for you, masks were not mandatory. They are now mandatory. Here in St. Augustine, where we live, if you don't have a mask, you will not be served at any restaurant. You will not be allowed entrance to any business. And I went into our public supermarket this morning because we were out of water, and I was walking through the front door. Now, I had my mask because I know what the rules are, but I had to walk past two large signs before I could even get into the place telling me that without a mask, I would not be allowed in. So This is how it's been going since the middle of March. Do you remember when President Trump, he asked us to give us a 15-day window, a two-week window, to flatten the curve on the virus? That was 4.5 months ago. And we are still in that two-week window of flattening the curve. And the curve is nowhere near flat. Now, here in St. John's County, we have a mortality rate of 0.6%. That means that 99.4% of everybody who's gotten COVID-19 in my county in Florida, 99.4% of everybody who's been infected has successfully recovered from COVID-19 infection. 0.6% of people have died. Now, that's tragic that those 15 people out of 2,200 have died. But in terms of that being the numbers to qualify as some cataclysmic, apocalyptic pandemic infection, that's not even close. It's not even close. And the more people that get tested and the higher the number of cases go, the number of deaths are dropping because people are successfully fighting off COVID-19. But as you heard from the Secretary General, it is being used to bring in a new social contract for the world population. Now, I was going over clips that we could play this afternoon so that we could really understand what everybody's position is. And I found this clip from our friend Spiro over at Activist Post. And I want you to listen to this clip and really pay attention to it. The clip was made back in February. Okay, so this was about 3 or 4 weeks before things got really crazy here in America. So back in February, Spiro had a guest on his program, and they were talking about the end game would result in a financial crash. And nobody really paid attention to the clip at the time. And then when COVID-19 started, people forgot about it. But I want to play for you a couple minutes of this clip where Spiro and his guest is talking about the end game that's brought to you not by world government, but by world banking systems. Take a listen to this. This is Spiro from ActivistPost.com talking about the end game and global banking.
Once you understand that you are being lied to on an epic scale, presidents, kings, queens, or monarchs do not run the world. It is run by world central banks. This is a mechanism. It is a grand scheme, a multi-decade plan in the works, and we're watching it unfold right before our eyes, but very few people are able to see it. He who controls the cash box controls the world. We are in the end game. The end game is very, very simple.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Spiro. Today, we're going to be covering a very important topic, which many people tend to dismiss because they find it boring or they don't really think that it affects them, and that's finance and economy. But really, I believe that this is purposely portrayed that way by the establishment to dissuade attention. And actually, when you peek behind the curtain, it is extremely fascinating and important because it is a centralized system of control, perhaps best exemplified by Mayor Amsel Rothschild, who was credited with saying, "Let me issue and control a nation's money, and I care not who writes the laws." Now, joining me today to help us better understand what is really going on is the great Gregory Mannarino, who is a financial expert with many years of experience on finance and Wall Street. Mannarino also has a medical background as a doctor, and you can find his work on his popular YouTube channel or his website, which is traderschoice.net. Greg, welcome to the show.
It is great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, Greg, first off, President Trump recently gave his annual State of the Union speech, essentially saying,
"The unemployment rate is the lowest in over half a century.
This is a blue-collar boom. Since my election, U.S. stock markets have soared.
Now, what would be Greg Mannarino's current State of the Union generally?
Well, our economy is in free fall. The distraction is look here, don't look here. With regard to unemployment, I mean, it's in our face. All you need to look at is one thing, the labor force participation rate. How many people are actually working? Not the fake numbers that they want to give us that they're going to fist feed us. The labor force participation rate, how many people are actually working, is less today than during the financial crisis, 2010, the heart of it. Labor force participation rate then was at 64.7. Today we're at 63.3. So they can polish this up any way they want. We're not hiring. We're not adding jobs at all. It's zero. We have huge sectors of our economy that are in free fall. We're supposed to be proud that we have a service economy here in the United States. Well, the service sector has been melting down for quite a while. We're not making things. Factory activity down. Your manufacturing down. We're not exporting anything. Our debts and deficits continue to explode to the upside. But again, all this is hidden from view. It's above the average guy or girl's pay grade. They're not allowed to know what's going on. All they're told is, we're booming. We're adding jobs. We are not booming, and we are not adding jobs. Our economy is in free fall. However, the distraction of the stock market, very, very simple. We have a mechanism in place to keep suppressing rates, artificially suppressing rates. This mechanism is very simple to understand. By keeping rates artificially suppressed, it opens a doorway for cash to flow into the stock market, creating malinvestment across the spectrum of asset classes. And there's a lot of fakery going on with regard to cryptocurrencies, with regard to precious metals. I believe their prices are incredibly suppressed at this particular time. But again, right now, the mechanism is very simple. You've got a Federal Reserve that is pumping tens upon tens upon tens of billions of dollars into the debt market every single day, right under the nose of the American people. But most people have no idea that it's going on. And why? Because, like, for example, during President Trump's State of the Union, he won't talk about it. He will not mention whatsoever. All we will hear from the president, and it's not just him. I'm not just picking on him. It won't change under a Democrat moving forward, again, is the debt expansion cycle. You're not allowed to know that right now, presently, we are adding more to debt to the backbone of the United States and its citizens than ever before. It's an incredible mechanism, but you're hearing calls for even more debt by the president, by lowering rates into the negative. Yet, we have yet to hear one syllable, one word about how this is going to help the American people, who are already being robbed blind by their interest-earning accounts, not being able to keep up with the actual rate of inflation. It's unbelievable. But they take it. People sit here like the sheep that they have become in this dumbed-down environment, and they just walk through time and space, not knowing what's really going on, because they're not being told what's going on. They're relying on that stupid box that sits in their living room that dictates to them what they're supposed to do, when they're supposed to do it, what they're supposed to believe. I mean, like I always say, shows like yours are a godsend. People need to pay attention to these things so they can see through it. But this is all by design. Keep the people distracted. Keep them stupid. Keep them dumbed down. Tell them to look here when they should be looking over here. This is how the ruling class have managed to control the masses since time immemorial. And it will never freaking stop. It's only going to get much, much worse here.
So that was Spiro and his guest talking about the end game and the economy's being controlled by global banking. Now, what's interesting about that clip, and the reason why I wanted to play it for you, was that was just 3 or 4 weeks before the entire United States economy was put on lockdown for 2 solid weeks, and nothing was opened, and the only place that you could go was supermarkets and the post office, and everything was shut down. And here you have Spiro's guest, And what is he talking about? He's talking about the coming economic crash. And then 3-4 weeks later, with COVID-19, everything began to crash. In June of 2019, the United States national debt was around $22 trillion. By January of 2020, it had climbed to over $23 trillion. By June of this year, last month, it is at $26.5 trillion. So if you remember when Obama was president and we were gasping that he had raised the debt rate from about $9 trillion to about $14 trillion, now it's at just under $27 trillion, a number so large that it never could ever possibly be repaid back. And on top of that, we have a $2 trillion stimulus from a couple of months ago, and they're talking about a $3 trillion stimulus, and they've already given $7 trillion to the stock market. If you've noticed, the stock prices over the last couple of months have gone up a lot. At the start of the COVID crisis, the stock market was around 20,000 on the Dow Jones. It is now just under 27,000. And that's an excellent rate for the stock market. But that doesn't, a big stock market doesn't mean a booming economy. And that's exactly what we're seeing, because if we had a booming economy, we wouldn't need bailouts, we wouldn't need checks from the government. And what's the whole purpose behind those $1,200 checks? Well, the whole purpose behind those $1,200 checks is to buy your silence while they do all the rest of the nonsense of what they're talking about. Now, we are led to believe, and I want to give you some really interesting facts and figures about a very deadly disease, and it's not COVID-19. In 2018, a total of 1.5 million people died worldwide from tuberculosis. Tuberculosis is one of the top 10 causes of death anywhere in the world. And in 2018, there were 10 million diagnosed cases of tuberculosis. This is according to the World Health Organization. And 1.1 million children were sick with TB in 2018. And of those 1.1 million, 205,000 children died from tuberculosis. Now, if you have 1.1 million and just under a quarter million of those die from the disease, what type of death rate is that? 22%? 23%? That is a astronomically high mortality rate. But every year, we have roughly 1.5 to 2 million people who die from tuberculosis. There's no masks. There's no lockdowns. There's no global warnings. When's the last time that you were driving through your town and you saw a sign from the health department telling you to wash your hands and have good hygiene to avoid spreading the tuberculosis bacteria? You've never seen that. But yet, tuberculosis is one of the top 10 causes of death anywhere in the world. Now, compare that to what's happening with COVID-19. There's been 140,000 people in the United States, I think, who have died from it. And let me just make sure that those facts and figures are correct. But COVID-19 is nowhere near the level of diseases like tuberculosis. But you don't hear about tuberculosis. Last year, 52,000 people in America died of the flu. Now, I'm not comparing COVID-19 to the flu, but 52,000 people last year died of the flu. And there were no masks, there were no warnings. The most that I've ever seen is when you go to like CVS and Walgreens, $10 shot to get your flu shot. places like Publix supermarket will offer the shots sometimes for very low cost or completely for free. But here we are, 140,563 deaths in the United States from COVID-19. But that's out of a population of 350 million people. It is a very, very, very low mortality rate. All right, we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we are just getting into the new social contract that the United Nations is intent on giving to us. Stay with us. We are just getting started. Back. If you're just tuning in, we're talking today about the social contract that the United Nations Secretary General has insisted that this world needs and that we need to come together globally as one people. And it is not coincidental that this is exactly what the Bible talks about in the end of time, where a 10-nation confederacy is going to rise up out of Europe. It's going to rise up from the revived Roman Empire. And we all know what the revived Roman Empire is. The revived Roman Empire is the Roman Catholic Church. And it is the only church that was started by a government. And it was started by the Caesars, who lived in Rome in the early 300s, and Constantine and all the different councils that they had. And the nation of Rome, the conquering nation of Rome, they created the Roman Catholic Church. So people talk about the rise and the fall of the Roman Empire, but the Roman Empire never fell so much as it shifted. And it went from being a political entity to being a papal entity. And it went from being something that was run by a king to something that is run by a pope, by a spiritual leader. And every single pope for the last 1,700 years has retained the title of Pontifex Maximus. And that was a title that was used outside of religious terms by leaders in Rome, in ancient Rome. And so you have to ask, why would a church want to retain a title that was given to political leaders in Rome? And so we find that the revived Roman Empire is actually the Roman Catholic Church. And it is what we see in Revelation 17 and 18. It is mystery Babylon. It is the mother of harlots. And it is run by somebody who is, he is the Pope, but he is also the king of Vatican City. And this, of course, is Pope Francis. And we've been keeping you abreast of all of the nonsense that he's been working on and the things that he's been trying to accomplish. And he's been very, very successful. 2019 was the year that we saw the official creation of Chrislam. And for those of you who haven't heard of that term, Chrislam, if there is such a thing, it is the hybrid. It is the bastard hybrid of counterfeit Christianity and Islam. And this is what Pope Francis did. He did it in 2019. He spent the entire year doing it. And not only that, he was able to partner with Islam. He was also able to partner with the United States. And the ambassador to the Holy See in Rome, which is Callista Gingrich, Newt Gingrich's wife, she is the U.S. ambassador to the Vatican, and she gave a speech. I don't think I have a clip, but she gave a speech where she pledged the complete support of the United States to helping Pope Francis bring about what they are calling, we call it Chrislam, they call it the Abrahamic Faiths Initiative. That's what they call it. And the United States is 100% on board. And we also told you last year that Mike Pence took a trip. A lot of people think that Mike Pence is a very strong Christian. And I would have to be a little bit leery of Mike Pence, to be perfectly honest. He's a Roman Catholic is what he is. And when he was meeting with the Pope in his private meeting, he was gushing to the Pope about how much his mother was thrilled that he was meeting with the Pope, and he was given a copy of Pope Francis's Declaration of Human Fraternity, which is the constitution for Chrislam worldwide. So when we see that the book of Revelation talks about a 10-nation confederacy run by 10 kings under Antichrist, that rises up from the revived Roman Empire and the United Nations, something that has been prophesied for thousands of years. Did you know that God talks about the United Nations in the Bible? He certainly does. In Joel chapter 3, verse 2, Joel is prophesying and he says, I will gather all nations and will bring them down into the valley of Jehoshaphat and will plead with them there for my people and for my heritage Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations and parted my land. That's Joel 3, 2. In Zechariah 14, verse 2, the prophet Zechariah says, for I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished, and half of the city shall go forth into captivity, and the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. So, And then there's one more place I want to give you in Zephaniah 3, verse 8. Zephaniah 3, 8. Therefore, wait ye upon me, saith the Lord, until the day that I rise up to the prey. Now listen to this. For my determination is to gather the nations, that I may assemble the kingdoms, to pour upon them mine indignation, even all my fierce anger. For all the earth shall be devoured with the fire of my jealousy. So here you have in Zephaniah 3:8, God is saying that the day is going to come when he is going to gather all the nations on the face of the earth, and he is going to assemble every single kingdom that has any type of power, any type of influence. And he says, I am going to assemble the kingdoms to pour upon them mine indignation. And that's exactly what the United Nations is. The United Nations is the fulfillment of Zephaniah 3:8, where God said that the day was coming that he was going to assemble the kingdoms and gather the nations, and he is going to do it for a very specific purpose. He says that on the day that he is going to rise up to the prey, God's determination is to gather the nations and assemble the kingdoms. So, do you think it's a coincidence? Do you think it's happenstance that after World War II, which was started and waged by a man who in seven particulars is a perfect type of Antichrist, Adolf Hitler is a perfect type of Antichrist. And immediately after the end of that war, which lasted, get this, it lasted for 7 years, and it was a type of the time of Jacob's trouble and the Great Tribulation, okay? The concentration camps opened in 1938, and Hitler began to invade countries late in 1938 and 1939. So we see that the Jews and the 6 million Gentiles who were burned and killed and gassed, 12 million people in all in the concentration camps, that lasted for a 7 year time period. World War II started in 1938. That lasted for a 7 year time period. And immediately after the end of World War II, two things happened. The first thing was the United Nations, on October 24th, 1945, the United Nations was created and assembled in San Francisco, California. 51 countries committed to maintaining international peace and security, developing friendly relations among nations, and promoting social progress, better living standards, and human rights. That, of course, is from their website. Now, today, there's 193 member states. There's two observer states, and there is a Security Council made up of five major nations. And so we see that immediately, within 6 months after the end of World War II, the United Nations, in fulfillment of Zephaniah 3:8, was immediately assembled and created. And then, 2.5 years later, on May 14th, 1948, the nation of Israel was spectacularly regathered in the fulfillment of Bible prophecy, saying that in the end time, God was going to regather his people and to begin that process of regathering the Jewish people from the four corners of the earth. So, this is the environment. If you want to understand what the United Nations is all about, okay, you hear lots of people, they trash the UN and they call it the New World Order and all that stuff. And all those things are true. But when you understand that the very existence of the United Nations, remember, they tried this after World War I in the early 1920s under Woodrow Wilson. They called it the League of Nations, and they tried to get that going, but it failed. They didn't want it. But it wouldn't be perfected until somebody who was a perfect type of Antichrist rose up and created a situation in which the Jews were tormented for a 7-year period, and a global war was waged for that same 7-year period. That is the environment in which we see the United Nations. So, the United Nations is not simply a useless governing board of corrupt people who are trying to bring in the New World Order. I mean, everybody knows that. But when we realize that the United Nations was specifically assembled by the active will of God to bring about the prophecy in Zephaniah 3:8, that in the time of the end, God is going to rise up to the prey, P-R-E-Y, something that you hunt. And he says, for my determination is to gather the nations and assemble the kingdoms for one purpose, to pour upon them my indignation and all my fierce anger, for all the earth shall be devoured with the fire of my jealousy. Now, when you understand that, then you understand why on Saturday, when the UN Secretary General, when he was talking about a new era and a new social contract, what we are going to see is we are going to see an unbelievable rise in wickedness. That is what's been happening every single day of every single month of 2020. We have seen an unbelievable rise in wickedness. And governments are collapsing, and economies are collapsing, and all of this crazy stuff is happening. And as strange as it seems, and I know that when I say this to you, it's not going to sound believable, but trust me, it is. All the craziness that we're experiencing right now is actually the lull before the really bad stuff. Now, I know that you think to yourself, well, there's no way that that can be, because look at everything that's happened. Everything that's happened is simply a warm-up to get us to the place where the real damage is going to happen. Now, on our podcast last week, we talked about the fact that Black Lives Matter has received over $250 million in funding in just the last 12 weeks. $250 million has been given to Black Lives Matter through various groups, and George Soros is not the largest donor. There's a lot of other people who are giving a lot more money than he is. But suffice to say that Black Lives Matter has received unbelievable amounts in funding. And it's coming from groups like MasterCard, it's coming from Nike, it's coming from all of these democratic organizations that are run by rich white billionaire liberals. And they are giving hundreds and millions of dollars to Black Lives Matter and their ancillary groups. And it is going higher and higher and higher. It says here, the Democracy Alliance was created in 2005 by a handful of major donors, including billionaire financier George Soros and Taco Bell heir Rob McKay, to build a permanent infrastructure to advance liberal ideas and causes. Donors are required to donate at least $200,000 a year to recommended groups. And they're and their combined donations to those groups now total more than $500 million. Now, this is not taken from a conservative website. I am getting this from a liberal website, and I'm going to put the link into the chat room so you can check it out. But $500 million has been given so far to these radical groups. Now, can you imagine how much damage that these people can do with that level of funding and financing? And that's where all the race riots come from. That's where all these buses that just suddenly show up, and all of these out of town here in St. Augustine. We have something around Christmas time called Knights of Lights. And it's really, you know, it used to be a lot of fun. And the entire town assembles downtown at the town square. And thousands and thousands. Last year, about 15,000 people showed up. But starting about 3 years ago, the buses from out of town with Antifa and Black Lives Matter, they began to show up as well. And they stepped. Now, I have no idea where these people are from, but none of these people are from our town. And they are bussed in on these big fancy buses that park a couple blocks away. They get off the bus. They have the signs. They immediately start shouting. Now, I want you to picture this. Last year for our Knights of Lights, I want you to picture 15,000 people jammed into our downtown. And it is just, it looked like Times Square on New Year's Eve. And it's a very diverse group of people. You have black people, white people, Asian people, gay, straight, young, old, every race, male, female. You have kids, you have old people. It is a really diverse group of people. And everybody is gathering around the bandstand, and we're enjoying the Christmas music. And the funny thing is, I would say that the majority of the people who were assembled are not Christians, and Christmas songs wouldn't necessarily have a lot of meaning for those people because they weren't Christians. And yet, 15,000 people showed up last year to enjoy the holiday festivities. Now, about 15 minutes after the music started, the buses pulled up, the people, the agitators, got off the bus, and they were carrying signs that said, St. Augustine is the most racist city in America. And I'm looking at these jackasses, and I'm looking at these anarchists, these race-baiting rabble-rousers, and I'm looking at them trying to shout down the music. There was about 200 of these people. And they formed a ring around the outer perimeter, and they began to chant, "No peace, America, KKK, St. Augustine is the most racist city in America." And they're doing that while a incredibly diverse group of people were peacefully gathered to enjoy the holiday night. Now, do you see how ridiculous that is? St. Augustine is not the most racist city in America. I've lived here for 9 years. I have never witnessed an open example of racism. I'm sure it's happened. Racism happens in every city at some point. But I'm saying that in 9 years, all that I've seen with my own eyes and heard with my own ears has been racial harmony. I haven't seen any racial disharmony in St. Augustine, which is America's oldest city. And yet, these people, they show up with the buses, and they show up with the signs, and they start yelling and screaming, and they want you to repent of your racism, and they want you to get down on your knees and apologize for slavery. And it is absolute insanity. Now, why do we talk about all this? What does Knights of Lights and Black Lives Matter have to do with the United Nations? Because in that clip that I played for you from the official UN commercial that was released on Saturday. That's the visual that you see when they are talking about it is time to reset this world. And that's what they want to do. And they are using the anniversary of Nelson Mandela, who was a socialist and a Marxist, and he advocated those principles that are antithetical to a free society. You don't make people free by telling them what to do. That's not a free society. And when they said, and I'm just going to read these couple of lines to you again, this is what the Secretary General said in the longer version of his speech. He said, COVID-19 has been likened to an X-ray, revealing fractures in the fragile skeleton of the societies we have built. It is exposing fallacies and falsehoods everywhere. And then he attacks the free markets. He says, the lie that free markets can deliver health care for all. The fiction that unpaid care work is not work. The delusion that we live in a post-racist world. The myth that we are all in the same boat. Now, this is exactly what socialists want you to do. They want everybody to be in the same boat. Now, do you want to be in the same boat? Have you ever gone on a cruise ship? I only did that one time in my life, and I didn't really care for being on a cruise. It didn't really excite me. I didn't think the food was all that good. I thought it was all kind of mediocre, even though it was a brand new cruise ship. And I mean, this was years ago. I think it was 2004, and this was when I lived up north, and we took a cruise for 7 days of the Bahamas and all that stuff, and it was beautiful once you got down there. But the point of what I'm saying is what the United Nations wants to do is they want to make everybody equal. But people are not equal. And the only way that you make everybody equal is you take the work that the relatively few people have done to be successful, and you penalize them, and you take from them, and you give to the people who aren't working at all. And you give the benefits that the people who have worked to create, you now give that for free to the people who aren't working, who don't want to work. And what happens is the people at the top are dragged down to the middle, and the people at the bottom are pushed up to the same place. Now, what do you have? You have a society where everybody is on the same platform. Now, if you've ever been on a cruise ship, you understand that the higher that you go, the more expensive the rooms get. And if you have more money, you can buy yourself a nicer room. The people who work on the cruise ship do not live in those really nice rooms. They live in smaller, functional rooms down at the bottom. And why? Why doesn't everybody live on a cruise ship in a big, beautiful suite? Because that's not how it works. You've got to have the money to pay for those beautiful rooms. And if you don't have that money to pay for a top-of-the-line suite, then you have to take a smaller room. You have to take what they call the economy room. And for the people who are the workers on the ship, their rooms, I have never seen one, but I imagine that they're not too exciting, and that they are just purely functional. I can remember back when I was in my 20s, I spent the summer at the Jersey Shore, and I worked as a waiter at this big fancy old hotel in a town called Spring Lake in New Jersey. And they provided for me a room free of charge while I was working as a waiter at the hotel. Where was this room? It was downstairs in the basement. and it was next to the oil burning heater and the air conditioning system. And when I was down in this room, I had no delusions of where I was. I was in a room that I did not enjoy spending time in, and I very quickly found a different job that would pay me enough money so that I could move out of the hotel basement and get my own apartment and live in a nicer style. But I didn't get to that point because somebody gave me money. I got to that point because I got a different job where I had to work harder, but I was paid more. And because of that, I was able to move up to a better place. And America provides that freedom. You can live in a very nice place if you want to work hard. And if you want to live off the government assistance, well, then you can live in public housing that you find in Chicago and Los Angeles and the Bronx and in Brooklyn. And I have been to public housing in Brooklyn. It's terrifying. It's disgusting. But that's what you get when the government gives it to you. And you don't want it. It's bad. It's very bad. But that's exactly what the Secretary General of the United Nations says that we need to do. He says that everybody needs to be equal. Everybody is not equal. And you don't want to be. Look, the Bible says that we are all guilty before God. And where we are all equal is that we are all sinners who need to be saved by the shed blood of Jesus Christ. That is how we are all equal. There is no other way that we're all equal, because people are not equal. People are different. Men and women are not equal. And they are not equal, not because one is better than the other one. It's because we are different from each other. You are never going to have races being equal, because different people are good at different things. But that inequality is not something that needs to be fixed. That is something that should be celebrated, because that is what makes us different. Now, if you make everybody equal, what are you doing? You are taking away the uniqueness from individual people, and you are pushing everybody towards the middle. And that's a very, very bad place to be. Now, I played this clip for you a couple of weeks ago, and I want to play it again. It's just a short little clip, but this is Chick-fil-A CEO Dan Cathy, and he is talking about how white people should shine the shoes of random black strangers. Listen to this. Dan Cathy, CEO of Chick-fil-A, talking about how white people should shine the shoes of black people.
Some of our closing moments here, but a story that was shared with me by a dear friend who shared with me about a revival that was taking place at a church in Texas. And at that revival, on the front seat was an older African-American man that was sitting there. And this young man got up that was there in that service, and he'd been so gripped with conviction about the racism that was in that local community in a small town in Texas that he took a shoe brush and he walked over to this elderly gentleman and he knelt on his knees and began to shine his shoes. And tears began to flow in that service. It was an attitude of conviction. So I invite folks just to put some words to action here. And if we need to find somebody that needs to have their shoe shine, we need to just go right on over and shine their shoes. And whether they got tennis shoes on or not, maybe they got sandals on, it really doesn't matter. But there's a time in which we need to have, you know, some personal action here. Maybe we need to give them a hug, too, brother.
And some stock in Chick-fil-A.
But I bought about 1,500 of these, and I gave them all our Chick-fil-A operators and staff a number of years ago. And so any expressions of a contrite heart, of a sense of humility, a sense of shame, a sense of embarrassment, begin with an apologetic heart. I think that's...
So there you have Dan Cathy talking about, now he's a multimillionaire. He has more money than he could ever spend in a thousand lifetimes. And he is talking about how white people need to shine the shoes of black people. And I don't know what that's supposed to accomplish, but when Dan Cathy tried to do that for Christian rapper Lecrae in that same meeting, you heard what... Lecrae said, he said, how about some stock in Chick-fil-A? And Dan Cathy, everybody laughed at that, but Dan Cathy did not laugh. He didn't think it was funny. He had no comment for that, because that would be something that would actually be helpful. And they don't want to do that. It's not about help. It's about control. And Lecrae went on social media afterward, and he talked about how uncomfortable he felt and how he felt that Dan Cathy was simply grandstanding. But all of these things have to do with it's no accident that you have racism, COVID-19, mandatory mask wearing, digital identification, global vaccinations, and the United Nations calling for a new social contract with humanity. All of these things are not separate events. They are all linked, and they are all connected. And this is what the Secretary General was really talking about on Saturday. And what they want to do is, well, not what they want to do. This is what they're doing. This is what they're using this crisis for. This crisis, I guarantee you, will continue from now until the elections. It is not going to slow down. It may change form, but it will absolutely not slow down between now and November. And it is going to continue to be used as the sledgehammer in which they're going to drive the New World Order in. Now, just take a listen to some of these headlines from today. These are headlines that just popped up today. Well, we talked about this yesterday. The couple in Kentucky who was forced to wear ankle monitors for refusing to sign quarantine documents. And now Disney World, they've reopened, and they are banning eating while walking after guests break face mask rules. Disney World has banned guests from eating and drinking while walking around the park after people were using the loophole to avoid wearing face masks. Less than 10 days after the reopening, the theme park has updated its face mask policy, which now explicitly warns people to stay in place and away from others if they remove their mask to eat. You may remove your face covering while actively eating or drinking, but you cannot be around other people. And like with all these regulations, you have to be 6 feet behind, 6 feet in front, and 6 feet to the side of people who are next to you. And what does that come out to be? That comes out to be 666. And that's exactly what, that's the point that they're driving home. And so Walt Disney World has now banned eating and walking, which is absolutely ridiculous, but people are taking it. The front page of the Washington Post today says, virus is crushing the United States. The crisis that shocked the world. And again, nobody is concerned about the flu. Nobody is concerned about the 1.5 million people who died of tuberculosis last year. Nobody is concerned about the 1.5 or 6 million people who will die of tuberculosis this year. But instead, they want you to be terrified of a virus that 99.4% of everybody who's infected with it recovers from it. And so this is what the headlines are screaming at you all day, every day. And of course, every single headline about President Trump is all negative. It's all, he's doing the wrong things. Nancy Pelosi, Hillary Clinton, they're already making plans for having Donald Trump forcibly removed from the White House when he loses. And they're already putting lawyers in place, and they're already preparing to dispute the results. And that's another thing that you have to be prepared for. If Trump wins, you're not going to even have 10 seconds to breathe a sigh of relief, because they're not going to allow you to. They already have teams of lawyers in place right now who are preparing lawsuits against an election that hasn't even taken place yet. And they are going to be spending millions and millions of dollars to stop Trump from becoming president. So there's going to be riots in the streets no matter who wins. If Biden wins, there's going to be riots in the streets, Black Lives Matter and Antifa. But the same people are going to riot in the streets if Trump wins. And all the race riots that we've seen over the past couple of months, that is merely just a warm-up. They're doing those riots now to get all the systems in place and to get everything all worked out so that when the election comes on November 4th, they are 100% funded and equipped, that they got the buses, they got the machines, they got everything that they need. And we talked last week about how Antifa and other Marxist groups, Black Lives Matter, for the past 7 years, they've been infiltrating high schools. And they have been, and I see it all the time on Instagram, and I see it on Facebook. Even some of my own nieces in my own family, and they have already been brainwashed by this Black Lives Matter and white people are bad and trans lives matter. Wasn't it funny how quickly that Black Lives Matter became Black Trans Lives Matter, and then it became connected with the LGBTQ? And did you wonder why nobody from the LGBTQ opened their mouth all during the month of June, which is traditionally, since 2012 when Obama started it? June has, for the last 8 years, has been what they call Pride Month. But this year, there was no Pride Month celebration. It was completely preempted by Black Lives Matter. Now, you would think that the very vocal, very active people from the LGBTQ would not like that, that they would have something to say. But instead, what do you see? You saw the entire LGBTQ militia, they stood down. They had nothing to say. And the reason for that is because Black Lives Matter and the LGBTQ are merging with each other. And Black Lives Matter is now becoming part of the LGBTQ, specifically in the area of what they call Black Trans Lives Matter. Now, I'm on their website, blacklivesmatter.com, and it says here that Black Lives Matter is a global organization in the U.S., U.K., and Canada whose mission is to eradicate white supremacy and to build local black power to intervene in violence inflicted on black communities by the state and vigilantes. And this is their, they say that we are a collective of liberators who believe in an inclusive and spacious movement. Now, who talks like that? Who talks about being liberators? Castro talked about liberating Cuba. Lenin and Stalin talked about liberating Russia. Hitler talked about liberating Germany, and Mussolini talked about liberating Italy. And whenever you hear language like that, you know exactly who you're talking with. Now, Phyllis in the chat room is saying, these people are never going to stop. God has to stop them. And that brings us to our next point, and I thank you, Phyllis, for bringing that up. Let's turn to, I think it's the Gospel of Luke. Let me just pull it up real quick. I want to show you what Jesus said when they came for him in the Garden at Gethsemane. Nope, it's Matthew. Turn to Matthew chapter 26. Matthew chapter 26. Nope, that's not it. Hold on. Hold on one second. Maybe it was Luke. Yes, Luke 22. Turn to Luke chapter 22. And let's just take a look at verses 52 and 53 of Luke 22. And let's see what Jesus said when they came for him in the garden. The Roman soldiers and the high priest from the temple. And they were being led, of course, by the betrayer Judas, who was the type of Antichrist. Luke chapter 22, verses 52 and 53 says, then Jesus said unto the chief priests and captains of the temple and the elders, which were come to him, be ye come out as against the thief, with swords and staves? When I was with you in the temple daily, ye stretch forth no hands against me, but this is your hour and the power of darkness. And that's exactly where we're at right now. We are watching the end time spirit of Antichrist rising because the church age is coming to an end. The church age is closing. And just as Jesus said to the people who came for him, who would put him on the cross and kill him, he turned to them and he said, but this is your hour and the power of darkness. So what are we seeing now? We are seeing the rise of the Antichrist spirit as an unsaved world is preparing to receive him. And it is not going to get better. God is not going to stop it. So don't, that's not really what we should be praying for. What we should be praying for is protection and opportunity for us to witness the gospel of the grace of God in whatever time that we have left. But God is not going to shut down George Soros. God is not going to shut down Black Lives Matter. He is not going to shut down Antifa. He is not going to shut down the New World Order. These things are happening because God is allowing it. And you have to be able to wrap your head around that. This is not something to pray against. This is the appointed time of the end times. And that's exactly, June just said, pray for everybody's salvation. Phyllis said, the Titus Airlines engines are firing up. And that's exactly where we find ourselves. We need to be busy about our Father's business. We need to really understand the times that we're living in. These are the times of the end. You cannot pray against it because God has ordained it. But that's, if you're born again, if you're saved, that's not a bad thing. That's not a scary thing. Remember, we were talking about Esther. And what did Mordecai say to Esther? And we find those words so inspiring, but they're not just words. This is what Esther actually had to do. In Esther chapter 4, verses 13 through 17, this is what we read in the conversation between Mordecai and Esther. Esther 4, starting in verse 13. Then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house. more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Then Esther bade them return Mordecai this answer. Go gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish. And Esther was willing to do what needed to be done at a time when things were getting really dark and really, really bad. And this is the time period that we find ourselves in. So, from my perspective, from a Bible believer's perspective, everything that we're hearing the UN Secretary General say, and we're going to, it's a very short clip, let's just listen to it one more time to refresh our memories of what he said.
The pandemic has demonstrated the fragility of our world. It has laid bare risks we have ignored for decades, the myth that we are all in the same boat. Because while we are all floating on the same sea, it is clear that some are in super yachts, with others are clinging to drifting debris. We are at the breaking point, but we know which side of history we are on. Nelson Mandela said, and I quote, "One of the challenges of our time is to reinstill in the consciousness of our people that sense of human solidarity, of being in the world for one another and because and through others." End of quote. We belong to each other. We stand together or we fall apart. Today, in demonstrations for racial equality, in campaigns against hate speech, in the struggles of people claiming their rights and standing up for future generations, we see the beginnings of a new movement. This movement rejects inequality and division, and unites young people, civil society, the private sector, cities, regions, and others behind policies for peace, our planet, justice, and human rights for all. It is already making a difference.
So, again, there you have the Secretary General of the United Nations, and they have the nice, happy, upbeat music, and everybody has smiling faces, and he's talking about how everybody is just going to be equal in this new system, and won't everything be great? And, you know, it really reminds me, so much when you study the history of Nazi Germany, and you see Hitler kissing babies and playing with dogs and giving these fiery speeches talking about restoring the greatness of Germany. And the people fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. And they were willing to look the other way and to be willfully deluded about what was coming. And I actually, when I was in high school, I dated a girl. I won't mention her name, but I dated a girl whose both of her parents, they came here after World War II from Nazi Germany, and both of them served in the Hitler Youth in Nazi Germany. And even many decades, this would have been 1978, 1979 when I was in high school and dating this girl. And so this would have been 35 years after the end of World War II, almost 40 years later. And her parents still had all these fond memories about Hitler's Germany. And it had such a hold on their minds. Now, I didn't see any Nazi flags in their house or anything like that. But you could tell that they were sad that the things that Hitler promised did not come to pass. And you would think that they would be very anti-Nazi, but they weren't. They really weren't. because people love to be fooled. People love to be tricked. And that's just human nature. And that's exactly what the Secretary General is. He's trying to push on people. He is trying to push on people that, you know, this is all for our good and it's for our betterment and we're all going to be equal and won't this be great? And COVID-19 is leading the way, and it's terrifying what they want to bring to pass. But again, if you're born again, if you're a Bible believer, you were saved for such a time as this. And the things that we're getting ready to go through, when the vaccine comes, when the ID comes, when the immunity passports become mandatory and nobody can work and nobody can travel and you can't buy groceries without your passport, just like right now, I can't buy groceries in my local supermarket without a mask on my face. Do you think it's going to stop with a mask? It's going to go once that vaccine is ready. People are going to forget all about the mask, and they're going to focus on, you can't come in here without a vaccine. Well, how can I prove to you that I've had the vaccine? Let me see your digital ID. Let me see your immunity passport. And that's why we say that all these things are the precursor to the mark of the beast, because that's exactly what they are. Well, we've come to the end of our time for today. I hope this program was a blessing to you. And again, don't be discouraged and don't be depressed about all this stuff. You were saved for such a time like this. And we need to be busy about our Father's business and to go out into the highways and the byways and compel them to come in while there is still time that His house may be full. Thank you so much for tuning in. Lord willing, we're going to see you right back here Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of our Rightly Dividing Bible Study. Have a great week, everybody.